And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms and restrictions apply.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code The Athletic, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
All right, Tom, if nothing else, we are men of the people and we are true to our word. We said on the last podcast, if the Canucks do something here ahead of the trade freeze and the roster freeze, the protection list, we would jump on the old podcast machines. And here we are with a special Saturday VanCast because the Canucks, in fact, have done something. And I think it's been universally well-received so far, at least the things that I've seen and I've heard. Jason Dickinson is the newest member of the Vancouver Canucks, and they get him for a third-round pick. So all things considered, this was an opportunity for the Canucks, and I think they've done a nice piece of work here.
No question. And they had an opportunity, I think, to do more. I think there were two or three things that came down to the wire that they had a chance to do. I think they were engaged in trying to move out some inefficient money. I think they had some options right into the wee hours before the deadline to land some bigger pieces even. Credit to them. There was a lot of legwork done over the course of the past month. While some fans have been like, oh, media is overhyping this deadline. Now that you've seen Nolan Patrick and Ryan Ellis and Andrew Ladd, like now that we've seen the full Jared McCann, now that we've seen the full sort of gamut of moves from NHL teams, like this deadline over-delivered. This was the rare deadline that over-delivered on the hype, right? I set the over at 5.5. It didn't hit until after the deadline had passed, and now we're at like 11. Incredible stuff. And the Canucks were in on a ton of it. They were diligent in pursuing this overall deadline as an opportunity. They managed to pull something of value out of it. And one thing that should be noted is in getting a center, they've landed like a premium piece, and a premium piece, not in terms of like Dickinson's a star player or anything, but a premium piece in that what's the hardest thing to find? Like the Canucks need D, they need middle six forwards, right? Those are available in unrestricted free agency. Like those are going to be available without an acquisition cost. What's not going to be available without an acquisition cost? Centermen, right? Like there are no centermen in UFA short of Philip Deneau, who's going to cost an arm and a leg, that you can go get. Dickinson, they've landed their center. They're now off to a good start, having taken advantage of an opportunity that they absolutely had to seize. And to their credit, they diligently worked. They were prepared for it, and they've managed to pull something out of the fire.
Yeah, now we say the acquisition cost is a third rounder in this year's draft. Of course, he's an RFA, so his ticket price is still to be determined, but seems like the Canucks are pretty confident that he's going to fall in line with the money that they've got available, and so I don't think there's going to be any surprises there. Just to recap, for people that aren't familiar with the player, just turned 26 earlier this month, so they're going to get him for his 26-year-old season and beyond. It was a former first rounder, late first rounder in 2013. That was the Bo Horvat draft year. Career high of 22 points. He put up numbers in Guelph, like a lot of guys do in junior. Has never been a scorer in the National Hockey League. Career high of 22. But hard minutes in Dallas, penalty killing demon, and you know, I think that that's a massive need for the Vancouver Canucks, right? They've been talking
about that
for a while. We saw late in the season the revolving door of penalty killers and the open auditions, essentially. So, you know, pencil this guy in probably as one of the top penalty killers, face-off guy. You know, I sort of see him as a younger version of Brandon Sutter, where it's not about offense necessarily. It's situational. It's a guy that the coach trusts and can use late in hockey games if they're trying to protect leads. Again, key draws, and can bring a specialty to the penalty kill. So there's a lot to like in this player.
Yeah, he is. You know what he is, J-Pat? He is like the prototypical guy who matches the rule that the best checkers are the first round picks that don't quite hit as stars. And when you see him play, he's got that. Like, he's got plus speed. He's rangy. Like, he's a really big, long body. And you can see all of those attributes that scouts would have fallen in love with when he was in junior, right? It's like, oh, he's going to be able to produce. He's big. He's fast. He's going to be able to do all this stuff. And it's like, he's not really, like, he's not going to be a 50-point guy in the NHL, but the skills that could have allowed him to, right, in another world, if he was maybe slightly more skilled as an offensive piece, still translate into making him a really imposing, assertive two-way piece, right? Like, all of that makes sense. Like, it clicks. It's kind of like the big center version of Cogliano almost, right? Like, that's sort of how I'd look at him. Although Cogliano maybe has a bit of a higher ceiling in terms of what he's done over the course of his NHL career. But it's the same idea in terms of the raw tools that people saw as, you know, having star potential haven't necessarily resulted in him being a star-level player at the NHL level. But the same the scouts weren't wrong. What he can do just translates really well to making him a really good checker. He played top 6 minutes for the Stars last season. His defensive results are through the roof, way better than Brandon Sutter's. And that's a key thing. Like, you know, he's got the Sutter billing, but his on-ice results suggest that, like, he is what Sutter is advertised as, whereas Sutter is just advertised as that, if that makes sense. And that's a good piece, especially when you consider the acquisition cost is just a third round pick. Not to minimize that cost, but I think that's, you know, the Canucks did not pay retail value here, frankly, right? Like, Jason Dickinson at the deadline without the expansion pressure on the Stars, he's going for way more than that. So this is a good arbitrage opportunity seized by a Canucks management group that hasn't always done their best work when working to a deadline. They did today. They almost got more done. They're confident that the legwork that they did will pay off down the line. And now they've given themselves a head start. Now they go into the expansion process. There's interest in Holtby, a surprising amount of it. Can they shed salary in the expansion process? That's the next test. Is there an opportunity on the other side to trade with the Kraken further based on some of the players that they select from other teams? And then you go into the draft, and then you go into free agency, and the Canucks still need another middle six forward, two more defensemen, maybe three, depending on what happens with Schmidt. There's still a lot of work to do, but this is like a running start to the Canucks offseason. It's something that they had pressure on them to do. To their credit, they were working, they were prepared, they had their legwork done, and at no point, like, I don't think at any point was today a stressful situation for the Canucks hockey operations group. I think it was frustrating as some of the deals that they tried to do went off the board. And by the way, I believe they did kick the tires on Mason Appleton. I just want to note that. You know, I think there was some frustration when some of the bigger things that they were trying to do didn't come up their number, like didn't result in moves, but I don't think they were stressed out. I think they were prepared. I think they'd put a ton of legwork in prior to the deadline. And I think there's some confidence that some of the groundwork, even that maybe didn't result in deals today or before noon local time, you know, will pay off down the line as the Canucks sort of move into the other stages of this unique hockey offseason.
Yeah, and they didn't get Mason Appleton, but Seattle likely will. So they're going to see a fair bit of Mason Appleton within the division, I would imagine, unless the Jets do something and surprise us when the protected lists are released on Sunday. Just one quick thought on something you mentioned there about, you know, guys that are taken late in first rounds. And I totally agree with what you say. You know, a lot of players are first round picks, A, because of their talent, but B, because of their hockey IQ, right?
Right.
And if the skills maybe don't materialize at the NHL level, they don't lose their hockey IQ. And so you just apply it in different ways. Like, I think of, like, Manny Malhotra was a top 10 draft pick, right?
Oh, never. Yeah. Manny Malhotra was such a prized prospect that the Rangers refused to include him in a package for Pavel Bure back in 96. Like, people forget that. Like, Malhotra is like the original, the best checkers are failed first rounders rule guy.
Yeah, and so never lived up to the junior billing in the NHL, but was always a sharp player, was a sharp player when he was drafted and stuck it through, and now he's coaching in the NHL. You know, that hockey IQ has served him well for a long, long time. So I think you have to like that about a guy like Jason Dickinson. The other thing is, and I've seen Jim quoted already, talking about his character. And we know that Jim Benning and the Canucks value character. Sometimes it's become, you know, the butt of jokes and, you know, how many character guys can you have? But remember that Jason Dickinson was right there front and center at the podium with Ryan Reeves and Bo Horvat last year when play in the bubble was halted for the Black Lives Matter protest. And this is a guy. And I know you've talked to him today, so yeah, we should probably...
I asked him about that. I also asked him, because people forget, too, he was, aside from Matt Dumba, who kneeled ahead of that Oilers-Blackhawks game that kicked off the bubble hockey tournament in the West, it was a couple days later during one of those round-robin games that Robin Lehner, Ryan Reeves, Tyler Seguin, and Jason Dickinson became right. The first four players to kneel... outside of like among players that were then going to compete later that game. I was at that contest, and I think it was really important to Jason to show people, like, for him, this wasn't political, even though it was interpreted that way. I think it was important to him, and what sort of lingers in his mind is the unity that hockey players showed in just taking a stand to do what was right for a singular reason, with a singular focus, with everyone bought in, you know, politics independent, to just sort of prove that people are wrong about the idea that hockey players aren't sort of doing anything about matters of racial injustice and inequalities. Very bright guy, dry sense of humor, well-liked by his teammates in general. And I got that sense from talking to him immediately. You know, we talked about everything from his wedding plans. He's in Ontario. He's pushed his wedding another summer. He was supposed to get married this summer. He's getting married next summer so that they can do the whole big shindig. You know, talk to him about his contract status. A lot of this will be up at The Athletic, and our readers can see it there. VIPs will be able to see it there. But he's a really bright guy, dry sense of humor. And I do think the overall leadership that, you know, the leadership role that he took on, I do think mattered to him. And I think it mattered to him in part because of how universal the support for it was within the ranks of NHL players that were still playing in the Western bubble at that time. The fact that everyone stepped up together is something that I think he takes a lot from. I'd note this too. Jason Dickinson, as you noted, in Bo Horvat's draft year. So they're the same age group, both Southern Ontario guys. Jason Dickinson knows Bo well enough that he calls him Bowie, which is his first name. You know, he was like talking about like the good young talent on the Canucks roster. Like, you know, Bowie, I've played with him forever. I honestly had to like double take. I was like, what? Who? Oh, right. Bo Horvat. So same age group. They clearly know each other pretty well. They're represented by the same people, Pat Morris of Newport Sports. Yeah, I mean, look, there's a lot to like about who Dickinson is. I think we'll enjoy covering him. I think he's one of those guys. Like, I think he's going to be a go-to for us based on my conversation with us, with him today, J-Pat. But also, I just think he's a really good defensive center. Like, I think he brings a lot of what the Canucks need. The only drawback is he's not a really good face-off man. But honestly, that doesn't matter when you have Miller and Horvat and Beagle in your lineup that much, you know, like he's plus 45%. He's not going to kill you. And that's all that really matters. He gives the Canucks a ton of options. I also think Jim Benning sees him as a guy who can match, you know, matchup dependent, play on the left wing as well in the event that they decide to fatten their lineup and play JT Miller at third line center. I think there's a versatility that he's going to bring to this lineup too that made him an appealing target from a Canucks perspective. So honestly, I really like this deal. I think the Canucks did good work today. You know, I was prepared to say something different. Yep. I was prepared all day to put the knife in. But ultimately, you know, not only did they get this done, they were pretty close to getting some other stuff done too. There's still a lot of work to be done, but this was a really, really sharp beginning to the Canucks offseason for Canucks management. And you know, we haven't had a lot of like deadline moments where we've come out of it saying good work. That's what you needed. They got done what they needed to do today. You know, a good start for a management group that's been under a lot of fire based on how the last 12 months have transpired.
And look, with the Olympics just around the corner, I kind of liken these weeks here to the 110-meter hurdles. And, you know, there are still hurdles to clear for the Vancouver Canucks, but they got out of the blocks and they cleared the first hurdle. They didn't clip the first hurdle. They didn't stumble over the first hurdle. You know, now they can hit their stride, and let's see, because there is still plenty of work to do. Dickinson's a nice piece, but as we have addressed here on this pod for a long time, there's still plenty of heavy lifting. But I would think that, you know, they do feel good, and they should feel good. I'm with you that, you know, look, if it didn't go well here today, we would have said as much. But I think you and I both agree that this is a nice ad. And like, this isn't a piece that the Stars were looking to trade. They were caught in the protection crunch. And the Canucks capitalized, and so good on them. They had verbalized that, and then they were able to put an action plan into place. I laughed because I saw you tweet it out, and I know it'll be in your piece as well, but Dickinson, he described himself as a Kessler guy?
Yeah, big Kessler guy, to which I responded, to which I told him, I told him after he told me that he, you know, the 2011 team, he gravitated to them in part because he saw some of Kessler, like modeled his game a little bit after Kessler, liked what he saw out of Kessler, and to which I told him, I said, you know, Jason, I know Ryan, and based on your reputations, I just want to tell you, you're a much nicer guy. So we had a little laugh about that. But yeah, no, I like didn't even believe it. He was like, I was a big fan of Vancouver on their 2011 Cup run. And I was like, what? Huh? Who? So it goes. So yeah. So now we are at, you know, as we're recording this, we're now past the other deadline, JPAT. The club has, and I've confirmed this, has submitted their, and did so, you know, an hour ago, but they have submitted their protected list. My Canucks sources, multiple Canucks sources, would not confirm the composition of the list, but I've been told there are no surprises. And to me, that means the following Canucks are going to be protected in expansion, JPAT. Pettersson, Besser, Horvat, Miller, Pearson, Mott, and Dickinson. Cole in, now exposed as a result of the trade today. Nate Schmidt, Tyler Myers, Olli Juolevi, and then Thatcher Demko in goal. That is the Canucks protected list for the 2021 expansion draft. Again, not confirmed, but I know there's no surprises, and that's what it will be. I feel very, very confident, like projecting that like a CNN election result. So there you go. That's the actual protected list. The Canucks did in fact monetize one of their, you know, vacant protected slots, and good on them. They really had to. I still think they could have monetized one on the back end, but I think as things developed, they decided that really their priority was to monetize an additional slot at up front. And they did just that, adding Dickinson for a third round pick.
So there you go, Seattle, have at it. And we'll find out on Wednesday when the expansion roster is revealed. One other quick thing on Jason Dickinson, and this won't matter to a lot of people, but he wears number 18 in Dallas. He'll probably be able to wear number 18 in Vancouver, too. I would think that one chapter of 18 is probably closed, but that's for business in the days and weeks ahead here. But it might be a seamless transition as far as uniform numbers are concerned for Jason Dickinson as he joins his new hockey club. Look, we said we would do a special podcast if the Canucks made a trade, and they did. And so we'll have more to say. We'll get back into our regular routine on Monday once the protected lists are revealed and we can scour them and get a better sense of maybe where Seattle's going. But one other quick piece of business that I want to touch on here is the day started with news out of Dallas with Miro Heiskanen breaking the bank and breaking records for defensemen coming out of their entry-level deals. 8 years at $8.45 million. That's a hell of a birthday present. He turns 22 tomorrow, and we wondered, you know, who would be the first of the group to jump? Well, we got the answer today. It's Miro Heiskanen. How does this impact the whole Quinn Hughes situation moving forward?
You know, to be honest with you, JPAT, I don't think it has a ton of impact because, first of all, I don't think Hughes is going long, right? Like, I don't think we're going to see eight-year term out of Hughes. And secondly, Heiskanen's overall game, I think, is seen around the industry not just as being superior to Quinn Hughes's, but superior to Cale Makar's. And as a result, I do think he was in a different class, like a different echelon. He'd sort of separated himself from the pack as a result. Not from Makar. I mean, Makar's got the bona fides and the Calder win and the Norris nomination. So I'm not saying that Makar is a lower grade of comp, but I do think that overall, Heiskanen's a different beast at this point in their career and based on what Hughes managed in his platform season. The really interesting part to me is that Heiskanen is now, you know, set a record for a second contract defenseman. He becomes the second defender since, joining Thomas Chabot to break through the Drew Doughty ceiling, the $7.5 million second contract that Drew Doughty signed in like 2011, like a decade ago, JPAT. Only two defensemen have managed to beat it. Defenders have not been subject to the same inflationary pressure that forwards have. And what's really interesting about this from my perspective too, is Heiskanen and Chabot have one thing in common, JPAT. They have the same agent, Ian Pulver. So it's one guy who's broken the record twice. He broke his own record today, which is some tidy work from Pulver, a Toronto-based player agent, and a really interesting just overall sort of tone setter, I think, with greater impacts for Cale Makar than for Quinn Hughes.
Well, I mean, you were there in the bubble. You saw him, and he was all world in the Stars' run to the Stanley Cup in Edmonton. 26 points in 27 games. Like, in the regular seasons, you look at his numbers three seasons in, 33, 35, and 27 points. And, you know, like, fairly pedestrian, but we've established. I mean, this guy is one of the elite skaters in the NHL, and he's just getting started, really brushing the surface of what's possible there. But, man, he was good in that playoff run to the Stanley Cup final. All right, we'll leave it at that for this special Saturday emergency pod. The Canucks acquire Jason Dickinson, 26-year-old third-line center, fits the bill, fills a need for this hockey club, and now we'll see what transpires over the weeks ahead with expansion, the draft next weekend, and then into free agency. So the Canucks just getting started, hopefully, and we'll see what lays ahead here in the days and weeks coming down the pipe. For Dransford's JPAT, as always, we really appreciate your support. Before we run, I should mention, because we mentioned this on the last podcast as well. Coming up on Monday, Pierre LeBrun and Sarah Sivian have a special edition of the Athletic Hockey Show. Pierre and Sarah are joined by a panel of experts as an NHL prospect who was drafted last summer prepares to announce that he is coming out. You can read Pierre's inspirational story on this groundbreaking, brave decision early on Monday morning, and then you tune in for the podcast later in the day, and you'll find that only at The Athletic. So check that out on Monday. We'll have a new VanCast for you on Monday. So lots coming your way here at The Athletic. So again, for Dransford, it's JPAT. Thanks for spending a little bit of your weekend with us here at the VanCast at The Athletic and theathletic.com.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.